Hello, friends, and welcome to a rare Friday edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. Yes, obviously, we wanted to give you something to listen to before the Ipswich Town travel to Southampton tomorrow in what on paper looks like the first really winnable game of the season. And if they do win it, things will be looking pretty good, won't they? I'm Mark Heath. I'm with my two best friends, Stuart Watson and Alex Jones. Stuart, I'm going to come to you first. You weren't here on Monday because, like me, you weren't around at the weekend, so you didn't see the game. You are now, however, you've just been telling me, sitting on a throne of cash because you've sold so many books. You don't need a chair anymore. You're just sitting on cash.
That's not quite how the conversation went, Mark. you've spied that these boxes have started to dwindle of Jason Dizelle's books behind me. Thank you to everyone who has purchased so far. Yeah, we're down to some limited stock now, but there are expenses to take into account. You started doing the maths of retail value times number of books sold. It doesn't quite work like that. I have had to purchase said books and share the money, etc. But it's gone quite nicely, thank you. I've got some more signed by Jason, so if you want them, drop me a line, as I've been saying.
What's the email address? Is that the best way to do it? Is it through that email address, just for my people?
JasonDizelleBook@gmail.com.
Excellent. And with us also today, the youngest of our bunch by quite a considerable margin, really skewing the age downwards in the average, a man who's yet to write a book, but I'm sure probably several books are in your future, AJ. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, Ross would like this, wouldn't he? And now that I'm skewing the age, the average age of the squad is coming.
I still don't think we'd be under 30, I'm afraid, on the average. But you would certainly help us skew more towards that.
Yeah, exactly. It's going in the right direction. And as we all know, anyone who's over 30 in Ross's eyes should be taken up back and just disposed of accordingly.
Thrown on the scrap heap. Be interesting to see how that changes when he actually turns 30, which is too far away.
Average is going to be in the 30s. I'm still in my 30s, mate.
No, I said above 30. It's going to be in the 30s. But obviously, clearly, I am ruining that average by being essentially a granddad. Friends, let's talk, shall we, about Ipswich Town travelling to Southampton this weekend. Because, as I said, 2 points from four games. Let's be honest, no one really realistically thought they were going to get anything from the first two games. Point against Fulham in a pulsating game of football that they had the better chances, maybe should have won. And then a really, really good point at Brighton last time out, really informed Brighton. And now Southampton, a team who haven't got a point yet, have lost every single game and have looked generally, as Alex predicted in our pre-season pod, like they're going to go straight back down because Russell Martin can't bloody change his stripes, can he? So, Stewie, you had presses yesterday. You spoke to Kieran. AJ spoke to Sammy. How are we feeling? What did we glean from the presses yesterday?
I am feeling, please don't take this the wrong way, that the a lot of the picture that you've just painted worries me slightly. That it's like, now we're going to go to Southampton and win.
Yeah,
but Southampton haven't done anything yet, and I think we do need to all remind ourselves that a year ago, less than a year ago, Ipswich were kind of the major underdogs. It was seen as a bit, you know, David and Goliath, that Ipswich had no right to finish above Leeds and Southampton as they did, and Southampton had just spent 11 years, successive seasons in the Premier League before dropping down to the Championship. Leicester, a little less than that, but they had won a title and an FA Cup in that period as well. So I kind of spoke to Kieran McKenna about this at the press conference yesterday. There's this growing narrative that, you know, newly promoted sides are going to struggle. And it is the gap getting bigger. That, you know, Luton, Sheffield United and Burnley all come straight back down with pretty poor totals. Last year, obviously, 4 points between the three teams so far. But I feel like it's almost unfair that Ipswich are kind of being spoken about in the same breath as Southampton and Leicester, because this is a club that was in League One for four straight seasons not that long ago, and I've just outlined where Southampton and Leicester have come from. So we do need to bear in mind when Ipswich are going away to Southampton that they are still the underdogs, and that is shown by the odds going into this game. That doesn't mean that Ipswich can't win, and I don't believe it's not to say I don't think they can go there and win, because I do, and I've been highly encouraged by what they've done so far. But I do think we do need to keep this kind of healthy perspective about, you know, where Ipswich are at. And, you know, the Southampton are not a challenge to be underestimated.
I feel suitably chastised, Watson. Thank you for that healthy dollop of reality. AJ, are you feeling the same as Stu heading to Southampton? Clearly, we'll talk about predictions and stuff later on, but give us your snap feelings as you prepare to travel tomorrow.
I feel like it changes day by day and hour by hour, where I look into a lot of what Southampton are and what the vibe is around the club, and I think, oh, they're there for the taking. This is a good opportunity here. I'm a big, when it comes to football clubs, as you might know from the preview that I did where I put it to the table, I'm big on vibes in terms of what the feeling is around the club. I think that plays such a huge part in whether a club is going to do well or not. And that's why I had Everton down there, because the vibes at Goodison, sorry, Stu, but are generally fairly bad all the time. And at Southampton, it started to go that way a little bit. And that's why I've got that kind of feeling of, oh, you know, there is something there for the taking. But then on the flip side of that, there are good bits that they've done as well. They've gone to Cardiff in the EFL Cup with a rotated team, stuck five past them. They've gone and beaten Everton, sorry, Stu, in midweek on penalties. They've had a good 30 minutes, actually, that I think was pointed out. They've had a good 30 minutes against Manchester United last weekend. There are good signs there, in the same way that there are good signs of Town and things that they can do better as well. So I don't think it's a case of saying everything's awful, they're terrible, Town are going to go there and they're going to get the win. And I don't like, again, as Stu's mentioned, the kind of a bit of a vibe that hasn't necessarily been universal at all, but maybe some people thinking, right, season starts now, this is the challenge, you know, they're going to go get the win. Anything that isn't a win is a big disappointment. And then the frustration grows if that doesn't happen. Don't think it's that at all. But I see it more than anything as an opportunity.
Yeah, on the flip side, there's no getting away from it. Southampton are, if we're trying to find three teams that Ipswich are going to finish above this season, Southampton would be one of those in that conversation. So there's no doubt about that. And there's also no doubt that as much as the focus will be on performances and integrating new players and learning lessons and getting better as the season goes on, you don't want to go too deep into the season without getting a win. And you don't want to be chasing your tail in the Premier League, because it's an unforgiving division and you only have to keep looking at the fixtures to go, well, the next game is Aston Villa at home, Champions League side, and then West Ham away, international break after that. So an opportunity is probably the best way of summing it up, as Alex says, but not a gimme by any stretch of the imagination.
There are no gimmies in the Premier League, Stu, of course. I do enjoy Alex, a man of science, a man of stats, a man of XG, then leaning more towards vibe-based predictions. Exactly. It's more of that, isn't it? It's the older Kylie player ratings vibe-based system. So I highly applaud that, AJ. And it's good to see you've got balance. You've got stats, you've got vibes. Somewhere they meet in the middle. And
you can't have one without the other. If I go and just quote everything based on XG and PPDAs and all of that, then you're just wasting your time, because you can't do it. You have to pass the eye test, and you have to, vibes, as I say, are a big, big part of football, I think.
Maybe that's the, now there's these huge staffing departments at Premier League clubs, and they have all these statisticians, don't they? That's hard to say.
Statisticians.
Thank you. Yeah. They have all of those, analysts and the like. Maybe they need a vibes department.
Oh, I'd love a vibes department. I'd like to be head of vibes at a football club. I think I'd be good at that. That would be lovely, wouldn't it? That's what we need, maybe. Anyway, Siri, you had presses yesterday. Yeah, you spoke to Kieran. You did the dance that no one really wants to do pre-game, but you have to do it because that's our job. What were the main takeaways in terms of news? I guess the thing that stands out for me is that we are almost back to a fully fit squad. But is there anything else worth highlighting?
Deal with that first. Obviously, we had Wes Burns and George Hurst making sort of earlier than expected returns to action at Brighton. Which was great. Wes straight into the team, George off the bench. Nathan Broadhead is now ready to be involved as well. He picked up that hamstring injury in the very early stages of pre-season, so he was a little bit further behind the others, but he's had at least a couple of weeks on the training pitch now, and sounds like he could be involved off the bench this weekend. Harry Clark, who underwent Achilles surgery straight after promotion, he could be involved if we really, really needed him, said Kieran McKenna. But right back is obviously a position of strength for Ipswich at the moment, with Axel Tuanzebe playing well and Ben Johnson backing him up. So there's no need to rush him back into action. But essentially, it's a 27-man squad now for Kieran McKenna to pick from. For those slightly confused, because I've seen that it's a 25-man squad that you can register, there's a couple of players that you can add on top of that because of their age, which is Delap and Hutchinson. You don't have to include them. So it's 27 players, which means, yeah, seven are now not making the cut for the match day squad of 20. Kieran Slicker, third choice keeper, will be one of those, but going to be some tough decisions. We know that Kieran McKenna doesn't tend to put centre backs on his bench because he likes to have a lot of attacking talent. So obviously both Wolfenden and Burgess missed out at Brighton, but even then, beyond that, Taylor, Alhamadi, now Broadhead's back. Who's going to drop out of the squad to accommodate him? Some headaches for Kieran McKenna, but some good ones.
Good ones, yeah. We're gonna come as part of this. I'm gonna ask you to pick your starting 11 if all things are equal, everyone was fit. So we'll circle back to that in due course. AJ, you spoke to Sammy Swaddix, and you heard to say you really liked him. You said he's a really good talker, and it's really the first time we've had a chance to sit down with him. So watching him play, he seems like a guy who's got like a real spark and a bit of swagger about him. Is that the kind of same when you talk to him? Has he got that kind of charisma?
Yeah. Yeah, he does. But it's balanced out quite nicely, I find, where he has that. He can joke with you. He can be a bit cocky in a fun way. He doesn't mean it in that kind of seriousness, but he'll say, I mean, there's some nice lines in there where he got asked if he asked Erling Haaland for any tips at the Etihad, and he said, I think he was looking at me for tips, given yes. How many I scored in the championship.
Go on, Sam.
Loved that. I asked him about kind of what clicked for him to go from a player that was looking pretty average, to be honest, in the championship, to one that scored so many goals. And he said, I just like to prove people wrong. And he said, I don't mean it in a cocky way, but it's what motivates me to do that. And yeah, I think sandwiched with that, there's a lot of honesty about the career that he's had and kind of a peek behind the curtain that I quite liked in terms of talking about his career, where things have gone well, where things haven't gone as well. Spoke quite openly about the move over the summer and how he handled that. Yeah, a lot to like with that. And I think that it definitely does reflect in how he is on the pitch as well. But he also comes across as a very kind of honest and open guy in terms of showing you what his life as a footballer is like. Again, another bit that I really enjoyed was him talking, Stu asked a question right at the end, about what things were like in non-league when he went from, I think he would have been League Two at that point with Colchester and dropped down to have a loan spell at Braintree. And he was talking about the culture shock of that in terms of players coming in covered in paint because they'd just been working during the day and not going to stay overnight when they went to play away at Halifax. So there are lots of good stories, lots of really nice bits in there. You can go check that out. That's online now.
Yeah, I always like that when players have got kind of a grounding in reality. I think that's always good, healthy for football players who generally, I guess the stereotype, certainly at Premier League level, is somewhat out of touch with everyday 100%. Life.
You can tell the difference with the ones that have come from that slightly different background. Tyrone Mings comes to mind, the ones that have had a taste of real life. And that's not to say there's ones that have been in that sort of football bubble from the age of, what, eight now? They're getting kind of scooped up. And I understand that football clubs have to do everything to maximise their assets and look after their players. And it's great the amount of welfare that's surrounding players now, going back to how it was years ago. But you do wonder sometimes whether they're a bit too much is done for them at times, and it takes away that sort of ability to think for themselves and to handle kind of adversity outside of work and stuff. So you can always tell, and with the ones that have experienced a different pathway, and Sammy certainly that sort of shone yesterday when he spoke to us. He's he was a good talker. I like him.
Is it called welfare because it is welfare, Stu?
Like Ali G.
Yeah, sorry, I've really aged myself there with that joke from about 1998. Right then, shall we talk about Southampton, AJ? You obviously weren't alive in 1998, but you do have a good knowledge of matters from the 90s, so you've probably seen some Ali G. You have done your weekly Meet the Opposition deep dive into Southampton. Clearly, on the face of it, Town beat Southampton twice last season, once in epic, iconic fashion. Kieran McKenna was at pains yesterday to say that doesn't really mean anything, though, because Southampton clearly have signed quite a few players over the summer. You, as we've already alluded to, expected them to struggle this season. We have seen signs that Russell Martin's commitment to playing the way he wants to play is going to hurt them. So what can you tell us about Southampton as Town prepare for this game?
That Russell Martin's commitment to playing the way he wants to play is going to hurt them, basically. That is the main takeaway from this, and what we've heard a lot when they've been focused on in national media is people really going big on it, say, oh, it's a disgrace that they're losing and they're trying to play out from the back and they're trying to dominate possession against these teams. I think it's just about how you do it and having the flexibility to do it. As we've seen with Ipswich, they're a team that adapted the style coming up from the Championship into the Premier League, where last season they knew that they could stand toe-to-toe with all these teams, and this season you have games like the Brighton game where they're not going to touch the ball or really have that much of a chance. And Southampton have not really changed that approach too much. And they've had, again, it's one where Russell Martin gets really frustrated because they've had good moments. They probably feel like they should have got something at Newcastle, where Newcastle were down to 10 on opening day. They had a couple of nice bits against Brentford. They were really good in the first half an hour against Man United, and then they missed a penalty. And it just feels a bit like when it rains, it pours, in a way, where you get the confidence that everything's going well, and then it just all falls apart in front of you. And you could see, I was watching the Man United game in the press lounge at Brighton last week, and as soon as they had the moment where they missed the penalty, they put up Cameron Archer, who's never taken a penalty in his professional career, over someone like Ben Brereton Diaz, who's got 7 and 7. They put Archer up there and he missed, and then the game turns. So I think it's just kind of poor moments, poor decisions, and then mistakes as well. They went down to 10 late on in that game, so they're not going to have Jack Stevens, the captain, available to play against Town. He's not just going to miss that, but he's going to miss 3 games. And then apparently he's had a go at the refs afterwards, which means he might miss even more games. So it is a case of when it rains, it pours, and then the pressure goes on to Russell Martin because of the style of play, because Southampton has spent a lot of money. And I just think that in the same way with the vibes, confidence plays a big thing. If they're now 4 games and they've lost all 4 in the Premier League, they've scored 1 goal in that time, was a stoppage time consolation at Brentford. They've shipped 3 to Brentford, 3 to United, and then they've lost at home to Forest and away at Newcastle. Even with a Carabao Cup run, it does feel like confidence is going to be low, and you can see that with their players. And I think, yeah, that's the big thing as to why things aren't clicking, as much as it is about the style. The vibes, again, going back to that, are just starting to turn a little bit. And if the result is not to go their way tomorrow, I think that there are going to be some fans who are going to be a little bit touchy with Russell Martin in his future.
We felt it last season, didn't we? It's almost, I think it was a year ago to the day yesterday that Ipswich went to St Mary's, and you felt it in the early stages of the Championship last season. If you remember, the crowd there felt quite edgy because, again, I think they conceded a few goals from trying to play out from the back, and then obviously Ipswich's goal came from that scenario with Amari Hutchinson tackling, it was Shea, wasn't it, who was trying to bring the ball out from the back, and Ipswich won 1-0, and you could sense the crowd were getting a little bit frustrated with it. And they were on a pretty poor run at that stage. And then obviously it clicked and they went on a ridiculous club record 20-plus game unbeaten run. And then at the end of the season, you know, you talk about confidence, they really started to stumble and stutter, didn't they? And ended up sort of finishing fourth and managed to get themselves together, I thought, surprisingly, in the playoffs to get themselves promoted. But maybe that is the nature of the way they try and play. It's kind of all or nothing. It's either it really clicks and they're great, or they get themselves, you know, confidence turns, the crowd get a bit edgy. And that's hopefully the scenario that Ipswich can make it this weekend and prey on that a little bit.
I think as well, last season when they had that and they went on that run, this is going to sound very obvious, but they had quality well above all the other teams in the division, that meant that when things clicked, they could just blow teams out of the water. That winning run was 25, the unbeaten run was 25 games. It wasn't a case of them needing to play incredibly every single week. They have the quality there to go and do it. And winning breeds confidence. You win one and all of a sudden you're buzzing to go on to the next one. And that's why teams go on winning runs, because it just goes on and on and on like that. And that can change, as we saw with them last season. I think they lost four games in a row. I think they had the Town game, then they played Middlesbrough the following weekend. So they'd lost four in that little stretch, and then everything seemed to click. But now they're in a period where they've lost those four games. If things don't go right tomorrow, then they go into Bournemouth. Bournemouth's a pretty good start to the season, I'd say, in terms of what they've done and the performances they put in. Then they're going to go to Arsenal. And then at that point, if you're losing those games because they're good teams, and fair enough, then you're into a colossal game against Leicester after that. And then it's mid-October. So with how few games there are in the Premier League to build up a run of form, and this will count for Ipswich as well, wanting to get a win, it's so important to make sure that you can get that confidence going as quickly as possible, because if you don't capitalise on it and you don't pick up those points quickly, then all of a sudden you're halfway through the season and you've not won a game. And I think that is the risk that you would have with a team like Southampton. Not saying they will, but it's not as simple as doing what they did last year.
It's going to be a lot of pressure, you'd imagine, isn't there, on Southampton as the home side tomorrow? Stu, I need to check before we get on to starting 11s and predictions and stuff. It must be a record, if indeed this word was uttered or this term was uttered yesterday. Six-pointer. Did someone bring this up at the presser? Was that actually a term that was used four games into the season?
Yeah, it was the opening gambit from Sky, and I think that has been kind of knocking around on social media for a good few days now. Because of this narrative around newly promoted sides that we discussed at the very start, with the way the three came straight back down, and Match of the Day already putting up graphics about this being the lowest total of points from the three newly promoted sides after four games in however long. So that was the very first question put to Kieran McKenna. Is it too early to call this a six-pointer? And, you know, it was a typically straight-batted, sage-wise level Kieran McKenna press conference. They are going to get quite samey, these pre-match press conferences with Kieran, because he's right. This one game at a time mantra stuff, it sounds a bit dull, but it served them so well to get them to this point. I genuinely believe it was more than just the cliche last year, as we discussed. It was, you know, the whole, we kind of gently poked a bit of fun at, we don't look at the league table and all that sort of stuff. But I genuinely do believe that there is this kind of learning culture, and we don't get too wrapped up in what each game means. We just analyse each game. We prepare as best as we can. We give it everything, and then we move on to the next one. So I think we've already seen that in the first four games in terms of taking something from the last one and moving on to the next. And they're right to stick to that. Relegation 6-pointer, it does seem, I think it is, it's far too early to label it that. But for the reasons that Alex has just outlined, it does feel like there's some higher stakes around this, because it starts to shape how people feel about things. Certainly if Ipswich were to lose this game, would bring a different feel to if, you know, they were to play well and get a draw, or even if they were to get a win, would really sort of add another layer of confidence onto what's already been gained so far. So don't want to overplay it, but it does feel like an important game, doesn't it?
Absolutely. But that has to be a record for that term being used. At least no one said, have you got 34 cup finals left? that would have been another step beyond. Right then, AJ, I'm going to ask you a question now. And I'm going to ask you both the same question. And it's going to be a variation on the theme, because I want to talk about the strongest 11. Now everyone's fit, almost fit, what you think the strongest 11 would be. And then we're going to move into what you think the 11 will be at Southampton, which is clearly a different conversation. But all things being equal then, AJ, a situation we've not had so far this season. Everyone's fit. We know roughly what the side has looked like so far. What do you think it would look like when all things, everyone is fit and ready to go?
Firstly, I just want to say I'm aware my Wi-Fi looks like it's probably about to collapse. So if that happens, please shout at me to stop talking. In terms of the squad and how it would look fully fit, I think the core of it stays the same in terms of, in particular, the back line and midfield. I think from what we've seen, where it'll be Muric in goal, it'll be Axel at right back, Leif Davis at left back, Jacob Greaves at left centre back, and then realistically, oh.
This is the interesting debate, isn't it? Because obviously we've seen Wolfenden start the first three, and then O'Shea's come in.
So, it's the first kind of point where you have to.
Well, that's an interesting conversation, isn't it? I mean, do we think that is going to be something he rotates depending on game situation? Because I can't see Greaves ever dipping out. He's been brilliant. So do we think, by the sound of it, they're quite different players. So do you think it'd be horses for courses there?
I'll lead on to Stu after this because we had a chat about this yesterday and I think that we're slightly differing in this one.
That's good.
I think, actually, I do think that having different centre-backs for different games is important and they're different players entirely, where I feel that Wolfie's someone who's quite nice on the ball. He's someone that still has work to do to be a good centre-back at this level, but he will get there and he's shown really good signs so far. He's not as fast. He's not as kind of alert, let's say, as someone like Dara O'Shea, who's really, really rapid. And I just think that allows you to make that change. I'm not saying it's necessarily going to be a regular thing in terms of chopping and changing week in, week out, but you can use specific defenders for specific games. I guess the complication with that is, and I know it's the point that she's going to make, but the money that has been paid for one of those two players does mean that there probably is a feeling that that's the one that should be starting.
Yeah, should we move on to that, Stu? So you'd say O'Shea over Wolfenden generally?
I think so, and that's no slight on Luke Wolfenden. I love Luke. Mm. He's an Ipswich boy. We've seen his journey. Delighted that he's played in the Premier League. But I don't think you spend £12 million on a centre-half not to play them. And for me, centre-half is not a position that you rotate. You can do that in your attacking side and come up with these bespoke game plans, but I like to see a settled back four, back five, and certainly at centre half to kind of develop a partnership. And I think it will be Greaves and O'Shea. Are they that different stylistically, Wolfenden and O'Shea? I think they're both kind of right-sided ball playing centre halves that are good with the ball at their feet. I think O'Shea's got a bit more mobility and pace about him from what we've seen so far. We saw last season that McKenna kind of did parachute in someone like George Edmondson from nowhere for the odd midweek game because George has got that bit more athleticism to deal with. I think Hull home game, wasn't it, was the early example. Oh, Liam Delap's sort of powerful running, we need Edmondson to deal with him. But I can see the O'Shea Greaves partnership being one that kind of sticks.
Okay, let's stick with you then, Stu. So I'd imagine you're both going to agree that midfield would be Phillips and Morsey. And then we come to the question of the front four. And there's so many options with Broadhead thrown into that mix as well and Hurst fully fit. What do you reckon would be the strongest front four, Stu, if everyone is fit?
Just on the midfield one, it's not impossible that believe I'm saying this, that Sam Morsey is undroppable. I mean, look, anyone who's listened to this pod for a long period of time will know that the loving that we've had, rightly so, around Sam Morsey and everything that he brings on and off the pitch. But you have got a Swedish international who's on loan from Italian giants Napoli at the moment that we haven't really spoken much about. And I've quite liked him.
He's looked really good from what I've seen. Yeah, Cayuste, yeah.
And he brings that sort of bit more height and physicality that perhaps you need in the Premier League. So I don't know if and when that jaw becomes ajar. Now, especially with Ipswich sort of out of the League Cup as well. You know, when do we wait all the way till the FA Cup in January before that happens? Thinking about it, it's the Sam Morsey suspension, which won't be down the track.
He's got, what is he, three yellow cards already?
Yeah. So who knows? Maybe that will be the Sam Morsey suspension, in come Jens. And if he plays really well, we'll have to see on that one. But for now, absolutely Phillips and Morsey. Top end of the pitch is a far more complex conversation to be had, isn't there? Where do you want to start?
Well, okay, let's start with the striker? Because there's only a couple of options there, so it's probably easier to pick. So you've got Delap or Hurst, essentially. Now, Delap obviously has been tremendous so far, I think. a runaway train is what I keep calling him. That's what he is.
The juggernaut. Runaway train.
Juggernaut, a battering ram, whatever you want to call him. He's been tremendous. So now that Hurst is back, can you see Hurst starting over Delap?
Not anytime soon at the moment, yeah. But that might be a bit more of a horses for courses situation. I think Hurst is a bit more of a, probably a bit more of a refined link player than Delap, who is what we've just discussed. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. But the two of them will dovetail whoever starts. I think we'll regularly see, as we saw last season, was it 59, 60 minutes last week at Brighton, the board goes up. You've given everything, and someone else taps in for the final half an hour to keep that energy high. So, good that they've. I thought the striker options were looking a little thin on the ground. So, Hurst being back is massive.
Okay, agree with that, AJ. So, Delap for the time being.
Yeah, don't really have much else to add to that. I think Mel had. I think that you can't drop him, let's say, in terms of when you look at a strongest team based on the performances. But I also think that you can, again, change around if you find the game where Hurst is more suited to it with his link-up play, with the fact that everyone seems to know where Hurst wants the ball all the time. That's what I found watching him. So there will be games where that's going to be more useful, and then you can bring Delap off the bench. But I'd say more often than not, it's going to be Liam Delap starting for Ipswich.
I really like the physicality of that trio, actually, thinking about it. Delap, Hurst and Alhamadi. I know it's not all about physicality, but they are some big, hefty lads who are going to put themselves about and make it difficult for anyone they come up with, just physically. Right then, AJ, the three behind the striker then. This is the big, big conversation / debate. Where are you going to go with this three? Because we've seen various different itinerations, versions of this so far, haven't we?
I think there's a couple of different answers to this, to be honest, where when you look at, on paper, the three best options, the three most exciting options, and the ones that I don't know if we're actually ever, well, I assume at some point we might see start a game, but it goes away from a lot of what McKenna wants, would be Amari Hutchinson on the right, Sammy Smodics through the middle, and Jack Clark on the left, which is very attacking.
Mm.
And very exciting, and lots of dribbly boys doing dribbly things and taking shots from outside the box. Don't laugh.
I love. I've got to say, I love a dribbly boy.
Exactly. Yeah.
The dribbly boys and the juggernaut.
Absolutely. Exactly. Yes. So,
I think that's a really exciting trio to have there. They're full of goals, full of fun, great fun to watch. But Kieran McKenna likes his right winger to be a bit more defensive in the Premier League, and that's why we've seen it being Wes Burns or Chiodos Ogbeni in, I think, every single game in all competitions so far this season, including the Wimbledon one where Chio started that one. So it is one where it makes sense, because then when things don't go their way, take the Brighton game, for example, if they started with that three, they probably would have been about 4-0 down within half an hour. But having a right winger who can come a little bit deeper, can work with the right back in this case, and then create a five, so work with Axel, and then everything shifts to become a bit more defensive when they need to be, and then move around again. That's what works quite well, and that's why we've seen the right-sided players quite often being Wes Burns, Chiodos Ogbeni, and Ben Johnson occasionally, just because it works really well.
I think it's one of Burns or Ogbeni on the right, and then it's a case of picking two out of the others for the kind of number 10 positions. It's the system, Ipswich play. They need that pace and direct running on the right side, which enables that team to shift and be fluid. And I think that enables Leif Davis to do what he does on the other side as well. So it's one of those two. The fact that Burns went straight back into the team last week was interesting ahead of Chio, but they're both similar stylistically, aren't they? Direct, quick, defensively do their jobs as well. I think it will be a bit of a rotation job between those two. And then we have to pick two from the rest for the tens, really.
On you go, then.
I think Amari, when fit, is, you know, the money that they've paid for him and the potential that he's got is one of them more often than not. there might be some times where they have to tread carefully with him. He's obviously been sent home from England under 21 duty with a tight hamstring and talked about his body being sore at the end of his first full senior season. So there might be times where they dip him out. But more often than not, I think Amari will start. And then it's really difficult between Smodix, goal machine, presses high, energy, plays with passion, and Jack Clarke, who's completely different stylistically, a dribbler, a ball carrier. And I think this is a debate we'll probably kind of now go into what the starting 11 is for Southampton and what is the best option for certain games. I think that will come down to it. But the fact that then we've not even mentioned Connor Chaplin and all the goals that he's scored so far. We've not mentioned Nathan Broadhead, joint top goal scorer alongside Chaplin last season in that conversation. That's exciting that McKenna's now got these options, like I say, 60, 70 minutes. And the fact that they're the sort of promotion core could kind of come on together is quite exciting. They've got that chemistry. They've got that understanding on the pitch. On comes Broadhead, Chaplin, Hurst, potentially Burns. That is the front four from the back-to-back promotion winning seasons. Could all come on together in one single sub.
Like it.
That's quite exciting.
Like a line change in ice hockey where they bring loads of players on together. I'll tell you what I'd do. I'd have Amari's a 10. I really like Amari's a 10. And then I'd have top dribbly boy, Jack Clarke, on the left. That would be my lineup. AJ, do you want to move us towards what you think might happen at Southampton? I mean, clearly there we've kind of named a rough starting 11, all things being equal. But that being said, it probably won't be that tomorrow. So what do you reckon he might do with the side tomorrow?
First debate is O'Shea and Wolfenden.
Yeah.
Because, again, we're going back to this one, but Wolfenden started the first three and then was left out of the squad. If you start O'Shea again, then you've probably got Wolfie going 2 weeks without kicking a ball in the game, which is not easy for him. Where do I land on this? Probably I'd go O'Shea, but toss a coin. Really, it's a really hard call in terms of that. But if we are going towards what she thinks could happen in terms of O'Shea being the favoured choice, then it's about getting up to speed quickly as possible.
That's going to be really tough, isn't it? Because as we said, he doesn't like putting centre-backs on the bench. So if you have O'Shea and Greaves as your starters, that means Wolfenden and Burgess aren't even in the squad.
But I think Burgess they play into
play in the Premier League.
I think we've got a bit of a lag situation. I think they know now that you either start or you're not in the squad as a centre half, and that's how it is. And I think they won't see that as a slight. Oh, I didn't make the match day squad. That's no kind of feeling that you're further away from the team just because you didn't make the bench. That's been, I think, well. Certainly the ones that have been here longer now, kind of that won't need telling to them that you can 1 minute be out of the squad and the next minute you can be in the starting 11. But how often do you bring on a centre-half in a game? I know now with 9 subs, it feels like you could have a centre-half on there, but I do like McKenna kind of stacking his bench with attacking options.
Psychologically, though, as a player, that must be quite difficult, I'd imagine. Because obviously if you're on the bench, you've got a chance of playing. If you're not even in the squad, you're not playing. And that must be tough for people who are used to playing like Luke Wolfenden and Cameron Burgess. Sorry, AJ, on you go. Your Wi-Fi is slightly dodgy. So we will persist. You need to sack Mrs. Jones and get some better Wi-Fi in, I think.
Yeah, change from Virgin Media. Didn't really have that much to say, with it, apart from the fact that you look at someone like Cameron Burgess, who hasn't kicked a ball in the Premier League yet, and there will be others who are going to struggle with that, because when there's not one on the bench, and you look at someone like Jacob Reeves, he is going to play every week. So that is going to be a struggle from that sense. And I think you also do want players to be a bit like hungry and a bit annoyed that they're not there, because that's what motivates them to come into training, to play their best every single week and to try and convince the manager that they can then go and come into the team. But it is going to be very, very difficult when, especially in the back line, there is a belief that you want to have a set group there that starts week in, week out. Being able to then come in and dislodge a player in there is going to be pretty tough.
What, so the rest of the team then at Southampton, what do you reckon would like to see. Morsy and Phillips, I'd imagine, again, you'd say. Although I do, that wrinkle you've thrown in there, Stu, of Morsy having to dip out when he gets suspended, and you'd imagine Cayous coming in, that could be very interesting in terms of the how things shake down over the rest of the season, couldn't it? But so Morsy and Phillips in midfield, AJ, what do you reckon for the top? Dilap, obviously, you'd imagine starting.
Yeah.
Oh, I think we've totally lost Alex now. So, I think you might need to come out and come back in again, mate. Yes. Right. Stu, on you go then. So, Morsy and Phillips in midfield. Amari's going to be somewhere in that front three.
Amari will be the sort of right-sided 10 if we're putting labels on this. Flip of a coin between the right winger for me. He seems to be wanting to be loyal to Wes, the fact that he came straight back into the team last weekend. So, Burns again with the potential for Ogbeni. And then I've got a sneaky feeling that Jack Clark could start this game. Yes. I wonder if putting Sammy Schmodix up as the player for press yesterday is a classic. We've seen it a few times. Bit of a red herring from Kieran McKenna. Also a bit of a psychological thing to, you know, soften the blow. You've been dropped, but you're still, we'll put you front and centre and make you feel part of it all. I don't know. I mean, Schmodix is an in-your-face sort of presser, and that can bring you a lot of joy against Southampton for them playing out from the back. But Southampton make you chase the ball for long periods of the game, and that can be tiring the way they keep the ball. Jack Clark buys you a breather. You give him the ball, he keeps it. The ball's glued to his foot. He can carry you up the pitch. He can buy you a bit of time. And again, we've talked about the money that Ipswich are paid for some of these players. It's not for them just to be impact subs. And I think we've all been excited by the glimpses we've seen of Jack Clark so far. Maybe this is the time he's unleashed from the start. We'll see.
Unleash Clark. I can't help wondering, Stu, how much more effective he'd be if he had clothes that fit him. It wasn't impacted by wind resistance, those massive shorts and various things.
Pull them up and buy them in the right size.
Exactly. Surely the performance analysts are looking at this at the top level.
The vibes analysts have counteracted them and gone...
Yeah, benefit to his psyche.
Forget wind resistance. It makes him feel good.
It makes him feel good about himself, and that's important. Right, AJ's back. Let's try his Wi-Fi then with moving on to predictions. No. I think early indications are you're not freezing, so that might be a good sign.
Okay, that's good.
Prediction. Shall I start? Because I've got a very this scoreline has been in my head all week, and also the first goal scorer. So I'm going to say, and bear in mind everything you've already said about this isn't just a gimme. Town aren't going to win this game. I think Town are going to win this 2-0. And I think Jacob Greaves is going to score the first goal. For some reason, that's been in my head. So I'm going 2-0 Jacob Greaves. And that would be, obviously, back-to-back clean sheets. First win in the Premier League. Goal for Jacob Greaves, who will be in my FPL squad. That'd be lovely stuff. So that's what I'm saying. AJ, I think, once again, you're leading the way in the predictions. So what are you saying?
I just want to make sure I'm leading the way in FPL soon with the four of us. I'm coming for Stu. I am going to go for a slightly more reserved one. I think it's going to be a draw. I'm going to I'm sorry. But I do think that this is one that is tougher than it looks on paper. So I'm going to go 1-1 draw. First goal scorer is really difficult because I want to pick one of the attacking trio. And who on earth is going to start? Amari Hutchinson's the one that I feel confident saying will be there. So I'm going to go 1-1 with Amari to score first, which will be quite a nice tie-in, obviously, with what he did at St Mary's for his first professional goal, just about pretty much almost bang on a year ago, to then get his first Premier League goal at St Mary's, I think would be really nice. So I'll go with Amari Hutchinson, 1-1.
2-0 Jacob Greaves, 1-1 Amari Hutchinson. Stuart Watson, what are you saying?
First time we saw the Amari backflip, wasn't it, at St Mary's last time out? Head v heart won this, guys. I toyed with a 1-1. That's where the head is going.
Yeah.
But I'm going with the heart. I'm going with a repeat of this time last year. I think Ipswich can go there and get themselves a 1-0 win. And I'm between two goal scorers, right? Again, Head says set piece goal. It's time for Ipswich to score a set piece goal. And I'd be putting Jacob Gree's name on that for obvious reasons. But I want to be a bit different to you, Mark. Make this a bit more fun. This is a completely rogue call because there's every chance he won't start. But it's vibes. The vibes department has whispered in my ear and it's saying Jack Clark.
Yes.
So I'm going with it.
Excellent. 1-0 Jack Clark. I wonder if Ashton's got a vibes plugin for his dashboard that kind of just throws a little spanner into the works, get the vibes in there and shake things up. So me and Stu are both saying wins. 2-0 Jacob Gries, 1-0 Jack Clark. And then we've got 1-1 from AJ. Amari Hutchinson. Rossi obviously will share his pick on social media as well. He's not around today. Shall we just have a very brief chat about FPL, boys, before we take our leave? As usual, I said we'll do half an hour and we're now on 45 minutes. FPL, if you want to hear an in-depth analysis of FPL, obviously go and listen to AJ and Ross's weekly podcast. I'm in something of a conundrum, a pickle, shall we say, in terms of whether or not I play my wild card, I think, because I need to get Haaland in. Haaland is the only thing that's keeping a lot of teams going. Every week, he can't be stopped. I've just seen that Isaac is a big question mark. Cole Palmer's a question mark. He's in my team as well. Saka, I think, is a question mark. So I've got a lot of big old question marks around my team. And I'm just wondering if now is the time. I know it's very early, but I feel like I do need Haaland. So that's my big conundrum. Stu, what are you thinking? Because you and Alex are doing brilliantly well so far. It has to be said, helped largely by having that big Norwegian unit in your side.
Yeah. Just captain Haaland every week. It's just
yeah, that's basically what you do.
That's what's carried me thus far. My team was... I'm doing all right at the moment in FPL. I think I'm up in the top 20-odd or something of our KOA league. But it's what could have been last week. I didn't need to use my subs. I'd banked two transfers. And I just the need to just tinker took over me. And I think I said on our pod that I was taking out Guardiol. And for some reason, I didn't. I took out Gabriel from Arsenal because I thought they were playing Spurs and then City. I took him out and he got something like 15 points. And I was really annoyed with myself because everyone else went for Saliba and I told myself in the summer the more logical choice was Gabriel because he's more of a threat at set pieces. So I was annoyed by that. I nearly put Watkins in. I think I had him in, then I had him out as well. So what could have been last week? But I'm ticking along nicely.
Yeah, interesting. I put Rico Lewis in the side and he only played one half. I will, however, for the first time this season, be starting an Ipswich Town player on Saturday, and that man will be Jacob Greaves. You heard it here first. I think he's going to score, and that'd be tremendous, and keep clean sheet. AJ, if people want to hear an in-depth kind of analysis of FPL, they can go and listen to the podcast. But has your thoughts changed since you recorded that show on Wednesday in terms of what you might do this weekend?
I haven't really made that much progress with it. I've got three things I'm tinkering with in terms of taking Isak out, in terms of my backup midfielder, Sangare, who's now out till November. I'd like to get out and then maybe trying to shoehorn Trent Alexander-Arnold in there somewhere. So three changes would take me to -4, not the end of the world. Wouldn't be too unhappy with that. But yeah, I think that's the best way to keep picking up points. From what I can see, Stu's 31st. In the league at the moment.
Oh, he's fact-checking you, Stu.
Okay.
I'm just going through and say I'm 54th, up from 55th. And Mark, I'm not going to go down in 5 seconds. Sorry.
I genuinely don't know where I am. I think I'm somewhere in the 700th now after last weekend's 39-point shocker. I need to make changes. I need to shake things up. Right, friends, speaking of shaking things up, anything else to mention, boys, before we take our leave? We've done about 50 minutes. Anything more from you, Stewie? Is that throne of cash comfortable?
Yeah, very comfortable, thank you. I'm just looking at some of the names in the KOA FPL league. We'll come back to some of those. I might try and put together a little top 10 best names that have made me smile.
Who's top of the league at the moment? We should probably shout them out before we...
Yeah, let's have a look. I've got it here. Top of the FPL KOA league is... Kev H, team name 17 going under, 0-0. Don't know what that is a reference to, but well done to you.
He's been top for a little while, hasn't he? Okay, let's see how Kev gets on this weekend. Anything more from you, AJ?
I hope my Wi-Fi was mostly okay, at least in terms of the audio. I'm not that fussed in terms of the video, but I hope in terms of the audio you can actually hear me. But yeah, might be time for a new router.
Yeah, absolutely, or a new house, I reckon.
Yeah, this happens a lot in my house, doesn't it?
Because you're in Cambridge, I'd imagine there's quite a high demand for Wi-Fi because all those boffins using Wi-Fi constantly.
There's a lot of nerds, basically, yeah, all absolutely. Around the city trying to... Yeah, they're not vibes people, you see. They're
exactly. They need yeah. facts. They need Wi-Fi for their facts, not vibes. Right, then, friends, I hope you enjoyed the vibes of today's podcast. Just to remind you to support our sponsors, use the code KOA at manscaped.com for 20% off and free delivery, all there. Excellent stuff. I noticed, you, they've got a new scalp buffer.
Have they?
Shaver, yeah, which feels to me like you'd be the man to try that. And I might get in touch with our Manscaped contact, see if you can get one.
Yes, please.
So absolutely.
Buffer makes it sound like it kind of adds a bit of sheen.
Yeah, I'm looking for the right term. It's like a scalp shaver / buffer thing. I guess a bit like the old beard thing where you can shave it and also make it look shiny.
I had a low point at the press conference yesterday where one of the camera... people at the back of the room asked me to move across in my seat because I think I was creating a bit of glare on the lens off the back of this.
Oh, man,
they won't want me to be buffing the bonds, that's for sure.
Can you and Phil, are you Phil Ham allowed to sit together at presses?
Yeah, Mitchell brothers.
The glare from the heads. Friends, what else to mention? Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes if you can, because that just helps lift us visibility-wise in the charts, gets the algorithm going more towards more people finding us. Also, follow us across all social media, Kings of Anglia on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, the old one. We're still on there as well. And I think that's pretty much it, friends. I hope you enjoyed today's vibes-based podcast. Have a great weekend, whatever you're doing. If you are going to the game, enjoy it. If not, follow it all with us. And let's hope, friends, this weekend we see the juggernaut and the Dribbly boys bring 3 points back to Ipswich Town. Have a great one, and we'll speak to you next week.